Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Gatel, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Pierce. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado, Boulder.
Well, Zach, had our first COVID scare of the fall this week.
Oh, nice.
I had a runny nose in the morning, which in normal times, you got a runny nose, kid. Suck it up, right? It's just life. But in these days, got to keep her home. Got to go hunt down a COVID test, which was surprisingly challenging. We looked at a number.
Was it?
We called the pediatrician's office, who told us to call the urgent care. Called the urgent care. They told us it'd be $140 per person because we're out of network, which makes no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Could not find an appointment at Walgreens or CVS for another 48 hours. And we wanted her back in school as soon as possible if she was negative.
Yeah.
Finally, chase one down. LAUSD doing free COVID tests at selected sites across the city. So I went and found one and drove over there. Went and got my own test at USC. And got to experience the massive operation they have over there. But I was convinced, Zach, this is a big week. Of all the weeks to have a COVID scare, I got Eazy-E coming on Sunday. I got
That's
Bishop
right.
ELC, you, presiding Bishop Elizabeth.
You gave the Bishop COVID.
Coming
what
on Sunday.
Bummer. That's going to be tough.
And I can't give the Bishop COVID. And then I'm not going to be there. I was like, oh, and then I was convinced, though. I was convinced. Actually, when I first found out that she might be coming, I was like, you know what's going to happen? It's going to be, I'm going to be quarantined that week. Like, something's going to happen, and I'm going to be quarantined that week. That's what's going to happen. And then it happened, and I was like, yep, all right, I got to be prepared. I'm not going to be there. How do I prepare my team? How do I make sure everything is good to go? I was on pins and needles, Zach. I didn't know which way this thing was going to go.
Ooh.
It was just, oh, my gosh. And then 3 o'clock in the morning, phone buzzes with a text, your results are in. And both my daughter and I were negative. Thank goodness.
Well, that's good.
Goodness. But what a scare, and like just a snapshot for me of like what basically the rest of this year is going to be like. Just, you know, every other week. Okay, here we go again.
I had not been tested for COVID until like 3 weeks ago, man.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't need
to. This was
to.
My first one. Yeah.
But I've been tested 3 times in the past 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because now we keep having these exposure scares. I think I've probably talked about it a couple weeks ago on the last week, maybe on the podcast, that Megan, who's works with it, had been exposed to her mom, and like there were a couple other exposures that had happened, and you're not sure like exactly how to make decisions about what is like a multiple degrees of separation from the COVID exposure. But I mean, we've got a pretty good system here. Boulder County offers free drive-through testing at a number of sites. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'll just do it on my way home or into work. The turnaround is getting longer. It used to be like 3 days, and now it's more like 2 to 3. It used to be, and now it's more like 4 or 5.
Four or five days?
Days,
oh, my gosh. Wow. I feel much better now. Ours were like 12 hours. I can't believe that. Wow. That's incredible.
That's
weird.
Yeah, that's how I lost Megan for 2 different weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Because she got tested on Monday, and we don't get them back until Friday.
Wow. Wow. What a time to be alive.
Indeed.
So anyway, that was my week.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Has the bishop been confirmed, Eazy-E? Elizabeth Eaton, Bishop Elizabeth Eaton,
I hope so.
AKA
Eazy-E. Last I heard, last time I checked.
We're just days away.
Now I'm just convinced the night before it's gonna be like, oh, not gonna happen. And my whole church is now excited, which took a bit of doing because the first time Bishop Eaton's got, who is this? Oh, national. Let me just. I'm gonna build it up for you. Okay, we're in. Okay, great. Sounds great. Let's go. So I hope it happens. We'll see.
Are you preaching?
Yeah,
Sunday?
Then I gotta preach. I gotta preach.
Yeah.
No,
well, that's
pressure.
My question for you, Matt. I don't know if for listeners who are not professional preachers, one of the scariest things certainly is to to preach to a congregation in which like number one most scary if the preaching professor was in the congregation. Which happened to me once in chapel when Dr. Satterley was there. But then the other scary thing was, like, to preach at a congregation full of seminary professors would have been really scary.
Right.
These days, I don't know if it's just my particular bishop, but I would not have any additional anxiety over preaching in front of a bishop right now.
Yeah, not additional anxiety, right?
Or my bishop, right? Yeah. But presiding bishop's a different...
Sure.
Might be a different thing.
Yeah. No, to be honest with you, I feel like the normal level of anxiety, but I always just want to do a good job for my people, right? Like, that's just kind of where mm-hmm. I'm at these days. I think, like, earlier in my career, not the right word, but I'm going to use it anyway, I probably would have been more, like, completely freaked out about having a bishop there.
Mm-hmm.
And week in, week out, like, I really don't want to waste people's time. So I try to have a good, try to have something for them that's going to matter. If I do that, then I don't, like, whatever, the bishop's going to listen in, great. So maybe that sounds too easy, but it's still anxiety.
I like your preaching
mantra.
It's
just anxiety from my community, you know?
I just don't really want to waste people's time.
I mean, that's it. We only got so much of it.
It's true, though. It's a good, yeah, it's real.
You know, but I will say, I was thinking about it, Zach, and the last time I had a bishop mm-hmm. in worship for God's Work on Our Hands Sunday, it was the ice bucket challenge year. And I did the ice bucket challenge in the sanctuary at the end of the sermon. Like, I set it up, and then it was like the short story where you introduce a gun, it's got to go off by the end of the story. And so I, like, introduced it, and I was like, you know what? It's got to go off. Chekhov's gun. And I don't think anybody knew what that, but like, I put like a little pool so it wouldn't get too messy, but I definitely dumped mm-hmm. it on my head at the end of the sermon. In the middle of worship, it was glorious. My music director gave me a look of death. Like, he was so mad at me. We're good now, I think. But it was clearly like, oh man. But I'm happy with it. However, I gotta say, since there was a challenge involved, it got me thinking, like, well, what are the challenges today? And I noticed this milk crate in the corner of my office. It just got me thinking. You know, it just got me thinking. I don't know, Zach. I don't know.
You let us know if you get that on video. We can put it on the whole point, media channels. Exactly.
To video yourself being injured.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Well, Matt, it's a big weekend for you. Big week next week because we got a special guest on the pod next week.
Woo!
I don't know if we're talking about who that is or not yet, but. Bishop Eaton, and then special guest next week. It's a real
Sanctified Art. Is this Sanctified Art Week?
Sanctified Art Week next week.
You know, in the government they have Infrastructure Week. Here we have Sanctified Art Week. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Unlike Spark Publishing Week, Sanctified Art Week is going to happen.
It's going to happen. We're working on that sponsorship. Oh, my goodness. I'm using it again, though. I'm using another Sanctified Art series. I can't wait to talk about it.
Are you?
It's going to be great.
Have I talked about Queer Catechism on the podcast?
No.
So, our community, so Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado, I don't know when we became RSC, and I tried to figure this out, Reconciling in Christ, which means we've been publicly open and affirming when you and gone through the process through Reconciling Works. To do that, the best I can tell is sometime in the 90s. I found a piece of paper from like 1996 that lists all the RSC ministries, and there are three of them in Colorado, and we're one of them, but I can't find the paperwork that proves it. And so they've changed their, like, ask for what your welcoming statement should be. So they've encouraged us recently to update our welcoming statement.
Yeah.
And that can be hard to do with, like, a student community that's always turning over because they, like, nobody was here.
Right.
When we did it or when we last did it and that kind of stuff. So try to think about ways so that we could engage that and come up with a welcoming statement and do it in a way with integrity. And one of the things that's unique about us is that our community is significantly queer right now and most of the time these days. And so a lot of the resources that they have are really built for taking mostly like straight white congregations to a place of welcoming.
Yep.
And so those aren't the kind of questions that their resources help you with aren't questions that my people are asking. I mean, in one way, it's super encouraging that, like, these young adults, like, don't necessarily, lots of them grew up in congregations that have been supportive, right? And, like, don't necessarily come with all the baggage that folks understandably have come with mm-hmm. in the past. But when I talked to I think it was Ashley Kramer at Work Reconciling Works about, like, well, here's what I want, like, because I'm not going to teach my queer people anything about queer identity, right? Like, they're experts right. at this. They will teach me about yeah. this. But they don't know much about Christianity. So I'd like, do you have resources where we can teach them Christianity using, like, a queer lens? Like,
yeah.
imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not... I've been unable to find resources for that. I'd love to hear it from folks, listeners, if you've got good resources for that. So the idea I came up with, and the catchy name, is Queer Catechism. And what I'm going to try to do, Matt, with some level of integrity, is to cover basics of Christian thought, of the Christian tradition, try to do it using like a queer lens, perspective, methodology, if you will. On one sense, right, certainly engaging... queerness around sexual orientation and gender identity, but using that fundamental idea of, like, that there's, like, the verb to queer, right? Which I, Matt, you're not going to be surprised, as a proponent of liminalism, right? That methodology, which comes from the queer experience, is a methodology of taking two things that appear to be, like, it's either this or that, and then finding the third way with them. So we're going to try to queer up the catechism in that way. So I talked to a friend of the pod, Adam, because I figured he's done, of my friends who I trust and stuff, I've never actually studied the catechism, Matt. I didn't even do Lutheran confirmation, so I don't know what's in it. So I've ordered a couple books that Adam recommended, and we're going to see what happens.
Good. What books did you order?
Adam really recommended, and your former bishop was a big force behind the By Heart.
Yeah, we use that in my Bible study. It's good.
Yeah? Is it good?
It was good. We really enjoyed it.
Okay.
It worked well. Yeah.
Well, good to hear. Because because isn't there like an African descent version of the catechism or something?
It's like kind of like commentary on it, I guess. But
commentary, yeah.
Yeah.
That's partially like, yeah, I found that. If we could do a similar sort of thing for mine.
Yeah.
Mostly white, but queer folks.
Excellent.
And not just queer folks, right? Like.
Sure.
Yeah. Starts on Monday night. I'll let you know how it goes.
Awesome. I hope it goes well so I can steal it.
I hope it goes well as well. Because that makes me feel better about myself.
No, it sounds really good. Awesome. Good job. Look at you. Still innovating a decade in. Just.
Innovating.
Amazing.
The truth, Matt, here's your behind the curtainness, right, of it, right? It's an idea. I've got the words Queer Catechism. I've ordered a book, and I'll look at it when it gets here.
Oh, yeah.
But Monday, I'm going to be pulling stuff together at the very last minute because so much of the job, you know, just becomes boring stuff of like,
yeah,
I'm trying to get a hold of folks at the ELCA Foundation because there's a mix up there, and I got these tax forms and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
all this stuff that is not. Me sitting in my office being creative and developing curriculum.
I know, right? Yeah, I know.
It's like, oh, shoot, I've got 45 minutes. All right, I can do this. But, Matt, we should talk about this breaking news on the podcast. I have joined the Solo Stove family.
Yes, so much news, so much going on.
Oh, big stuff.
And it worked for Matt, you. You sent a picture, it looked like
it was working great. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I learned from some of mistakes that perhaps you have made and other people have made. You know that you got to keep it underneath the
right.
the top line. You give it, let it get going, but once it got going, you know, the Solo Stove is a smokeless outdoor fire pit. Essentially, listeners, if you've not, it's double walled so that it recirculates the air in a way that the smoke burns off before it comes up.
Can they be a sponsor?
Can
they sponsor the pod?
Hey, I think they might become one because after I bought it, every single targeted ad on all my social media was Solo Stove, which I don't understand. The same thing happened to my mother-in-law, who Hannah, the final spouse, just mentioned verbally to my mother-in-law, and then all of a sudden her targeted ads were Solo Stove. So we might.
That's incredible.
We might get a proposal in our email if we just say Solo Stove enough.
Solo stove.
Solo stove. The solo stove is not magic, though, Matt. That's the... I mean, this is the best advice you're going to get on the podcast. Solo stove is not magic. You may hear, no smoke. Oh, that sounds like a fun, magical piece of equipment I'd like to get. Smoke still exists, folks. And a fire that happens in a solo stove will have smoke. Smoke will emit from it, and it's going to take a while for it to get warmed up and start cooking it off. Again, not magic. But people who want to believe in magic, which is interesting, Matt, because based on my observation and the sociology of a solo stove customer demographics, a lot of people want to believe in magic because they start the fire and there's smoke and they're like, this is crap, and they take it back to REI and it ends up in that garage sale section. Yeah. Which is where I found it and took the picture and sent it to you, Matt, and said, should I do this? Which is exactly what you did to me, and you answered the way I hoped you would, which was heck yes, go for it. So I got it for $140. It's like a $300 stove.
Yeah. That's, wow. Well, well done, sir. Well done. So less, it does have less smoke, just not no smoke. And you got to let it cook, it sounds like.
Yeah,
so
that's,
like, you give it a few, let it go for a bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what it gets rid of, is the, like, you're sitting around the fire and you don't have to continually move because the wind changes.
Mm.
And you don't smell that much like smoke, like, at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't smell like a campfire.
That's a plus.
You don't smell like you've just spent the night at Jimmy's Woodlawn Tap in the early aughts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the smokiest place I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, welcome to the Solo Stove family.
Oh, it's good to be here. This episode brought to you in the future by Solo Stove.
Speaking of Solo Stove, Proverbs.
Proverbs. I bet there's fire in this story, right?
You know, I got an angle on this.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, we just you thought we were leaving shooting the shit behind, but we just watched yet another Cinderella adaptation, and they change, you know, and depending on what decade you're in, what Cinderella is like, what brand of femininity are we pushing in this particular iteration of Cinderella. And here's Proverbs talking about a capable wife. I feel like there's a connection, maybe, possibly.
I think so. I'm a little lost on the Cinderella's here now, but yeah, I'm with you.
Well, let's see what Proverbs has to say. Do I have to read this whole thing?
I don't think so. It's like a long list, and that's...
such a long list.
It's not a story at all.
Mm-mm.
I mean, maybe we can start, like... I mean, I've got a note, so I'll start at the beginning to let people...
Good place,
you know, the
start.
Listeners perhaps have not read. They don't have access. But what if that's what we did? In the show notes, you could see the Google Doc that we're looking at with our notes. But it starts, a capable wife in the NRSV, a capable wife who can find... And then it goes on and lists all of these things she is like. She is like... she puts, I mean, and it is a lot of verses of describing exactly what that wife is like, but a capable wife, seemed like an interesting, adjective to me. So I did a little word study on it, and it's Shail, which, interestingly, Matt, can be translated in a number of ways. The most interesting one for me, I thought, is that there are many times, in the Torah where this word is translated as army.
Ooh.
It is used as a noun, right?
Yeah. Like
the noun version is an army.
So, like,
right?
A Seven Nation Army. Are you telling me the soundtrack to this verse is the White Stripes' Seven Nation Army?
Oh. So you could read this, right? Like, it's not just like, who's a really good wife? There's like super, like, other words are strong, wealthy. Efficient is a little closer to what they use here with capable. I mean, a badass bitch, like, is, if I'm, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that due to my social context and stuff, right? But that's, it's a lot closer to like that than it is to like your 1950s Pleasant, is it Pleasantville? Pleasanton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that, that movie? Than it might seem at first, in certainly ways it's been used in the past.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
And that bears itself out, Matt, as you go through it. because there are plenty of things that sound, and again, you gotta, like, when you're reading it, locate this within, like, extremely patriarchal times where female women are considered property and wives are property and not autonomous humans, that within that context, this strong, capable army wife is doing some pretty remarkable things. She considers a field and buys it. Yeah, she's a landowner. That's unusual, right? She girds herself with strength. She makes her arms strong. There are some things in here that are pretty countercultural.
Yeah. I mean, it refers to her household. It definitely it flips the script a little bit. A little bit.
Her lamp, her solo stove, does not go out at night.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. Her hands to the spindle. Makes me think of another fairy tale. Just FYI, we have a lot of fairy tales in our house. But verse 22, too, her clothing is...
22, too?
I know, 22 as well. 22 also. She makes herself covering, so her clothing is fine linen and purple. So again, you know, seems like either royalty or makes me think of the dealer in purple cloth. Makes me think of Lydia. Yeah. Some interesting stuff here.
Super interesting, complex, you know, multifaceted. This is not a flat character. Mm-hmm. The ideal woman is not flat here, but has many, many dimensions to her. The other thing that you're not going to get that is important to know or note is that this is a acrostic poem in Hebrew. Right, acrostics, don't ever preach them. That's mostly my advice. I've attended sermons where people preached in an acrostic format.
And, no. What?
Yeah, not good. Funeral sermon. Do not.
No.
Matt, I don't have a will, and I know I should have a will, but I don't have a will right now. But as a matter of public record, I want you and the listeners to make sure that whoever... or whatever gets preached at my funeral does not happen in an acrostic format.
How about the obituary? Could it be an acrostic?
Yeah, obituary, you know, go crazy. Totally, but
okay. Yeah.
Don't waste people's time, Matt, with an acrostic. So it starts with Aleph, Aleph, and goes all the way through to the last bit in the Hebrew alphabet that I don't recall exactly off the top of my head.
Awesome. So it's an acrostic.
Yeah, that's something, right? There's form to this, not just a giant long list for the sake of having a long list.
Yeah, I mean, it feels... I mean, think about, like, an acrostic, too. Although you would not want a sermon preached in that way. It's a form of creativity. And I wonder, like, if I was going to use this in a confirmation class, I feel like what I would do is have folks, like, write their own. Maybe have... I mean, that could get tricky, too, but I feel like that's the kind of thinking that you want to do. I mean, maybe it's a group session together, some brainstorming, and see where it goes. I think you could do some interesting things, like, how would you rewrite this in 2021 in the same, like, surprising, flip-the-script kinds of ways? Like, set it up and frame it in terms of, like, what's going on contextually, and then how would we... What could we write? What could we write? How could we get creative with this thing and do something poetic with it rather than, I don't know, analytic?
Yeah. I mean, so I feel somewhat compelled after setting it up, talking about queer catechism, that I should try to queer this text up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd say within the context of the ancient Near East, it's a capable wife. Right, and it clearly is this wife in the context of a relationship with a husband. But it's also important to note that, like, independent single women did not exist in the ancient Near East with any sort of, like, vitality to life, because you couldn't own property, right? Which is part of what makes this text interesting, because it implies that she buys property. Perhaps she buys it on behalf of her husband, but she's the one making the decisions here. And so you could read this much more, I think, widely as a strong, powerful woman than simply what makes a good wife for a husband, but a description of femininity in in the ancient Near East.
For sure. And then, speaking of acrostics, you were making a reference to a pop song of the 40s that I've never heard of.
That's right. I did not make this. I copy and pasted it from a source. But yes, it references a pop song from the 40s that goes, A, you're adorable. B, you're so beautiful.
Do you know that song? Have you heard that song?
I have heard it before. Mm. I don't know who did it or the name of the song, but
I looked it up. I was like, oh, that's new. I don't know.
Yeah?
Not what going thoughts? On the playlist.
Not going on the playlist, yeah. That's true.
Should we move to the gospel?
You know another way.
Yeah, go
Matt,
for
you
it.
Talked about Gangster's Paradise and yeah. Coolio and 60 Songs That Made the 90s.
Yeah.
And I have been listening on and off to it. They haven't done a ton of songs that I've been like really interested in because a lot of it's been... I was too young in the early 90s to get all the like obscure, like super arty songs that they did at first. But Gangster's Paradise, certainly in on. But this week, the latest episode was Wonderwall. And you will not find, Matt, a more fervent proponent of Britpop from the American South than myself. I loved the... there's the... documentary series about different musical things on Netflix, and there was a Britpop episode on that. Ugh, loved it. Love Oasis. You could kind of say that this is Proverbs's Wonderwall.
What? How would you say that?
It's a love song, you know, the same way you're my Wonderwall.
There you go. All right, yeah. There you go, Britpop.
You're my Wonderwall.
All right, I can see it. I'm going to go listen to some Oasis now.
A capable okay. wife who can find. She walks down the hall faster than cannonball.
We listen.
Where
I
were
make,
you? How we? Where were you?
I made Chris listen to the episode on Cake's The Distance because Chris, big fan of Cake. She mainly wanted to turn the episode off and just listen to Cake songs because she actually owned the album in high school. She did not own many albums. This was one of them. So she, big Cake fan. but I can see it. Now I want to do this one. A capable wife who can find. You could tell you, could you do The Distance? Could you do pretty much anything to The Distance?
I think
just
so.
Sing talking. It's just.
Ba-da-ba-bop. Ba-ba-ba-da-bop.
Ridiculous.
Ba-ba-da-bop.
Anyway, musical interlude. All right. Mark?
Mark, what an interesting week this is, Matt, in the lectionary. In that, like, I think you can preach a lot on this Proverbs thing, but, like, you're going to... Recently, I attended for the first time an in-person worship service where they read the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Psalm, and the Gospel, and... That's a lot.
It is a
especially
lot.
Especially when folks, like, haven't... I mean, and not to blame readers, right? Like, who haven't, like... not used to it, right? Just, like, hidden. But you're going to hit this Proverbs reading, and you're just going to be smashing people in the face for a long time, and they're just going to be completely delirious by the time you get to the Gospel, which, honestly, is not that captivating. But we continue... In the ninth chapter of Mark, after some real exciting ones, we got Mark, I guess, does filler, it turns out. Jesus and his disciples passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him, and after 3 days, and 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying, and were afraid to ask him, which is a great line, actually. And then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another about who was the greatest. And he sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." And then he just took a little child and put it among them. And taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." The good news of Jesus, man.
There you go. You don't like that one? You think that's filler? They're going to kill him. It's all killer, no filler. Look at this. Oh, my goodness. And then you get the little child. Oh, that's a classic that people think is all cutesy, and it's not. Oh, I mean.
It's not.
Wow.
What do you got?
Not enough for you, though, huh?
Convince me.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I like, we've got On the Way again. Mm-hmm. Again, I think, you know, this phrase is going to show up three times in the next 6 weeks. If you want a sermon series, even using the lectionary, On the Way.
Camino.
It's gonna be On the Way here. I mean, and it is on the way in terms of thinking about the path of discipleship too, because Jesus is trying to teach these disciples what this is really about, and they don't get it over and over again. But he keeps trying to, I mean, he says these extreme things like, they're going to kill him. They're going to kill him. So he's really trying to get them to, I don't know if so much understand, because they clearly don't, but to shake them out of whatever their preconceived notions were. And then, yeah, this thing with the child at the end, I mean, isn't this just a nice Hallmark precious moments kind of image? Just nice precious moments image. I mean, you could do that. You could start with that a little bit, but then I would play with it, right? Because I know we've talked about this a number of times in this podcast, at least annually, whenever these kinds of stories come up, that it's not a romantic image in the first century. And so I wonder, like, what's the equivalent today? What's the equivalent today for this kind of image, for what Jesus is doing in this text? And if you could think about that, you might challenge the image a little bit and help us get at what Jesus is actually getting at. Hmm.
To reach back to last week, which sets the stage for this reading, you can... Because what we talked about last week was Jesus forming new family and the obligations that come with new family at the time. Mm-hmm. And that idea that, like, that blood feuds were this social ill that Jesus is trying to get to the bottom of. And so he's talked about forming this new family, and then he says, I'm going to be killed and betrayed, right? Implications for folks who are in that close family, this new family system, is, first of all, one of you will probably betray me. I mean, that's the implication. You could see it very quickly how it would sow distrust in the new family. And then mm-hmm. the idea that Jesus is going to be killed puts an obligation on the family to, within that society, to revenge, like to seek satisfaction for that. So Jesus is like, hey, I know we've just been chilling and eating a lot and stuff, right? But, like, it's going to get real. And then in their minds, like, we've got to, like, we're going to have to kill back the people who kill this guy. You know, like, this is going to be ready yeah. for this. And then he says, you know, rise again, which doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I do like that line. They did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask. And... were I preaching this week? Am I preaching this week? I might be. I might tie that into one of the things that I talk about in my, like, general campus ministry spiel with congregations, is that having a community of support makes students much more likely to take positive risk, including asking a question in a large lecture hall. Because that's a terrifying thing, right? Like, how come you're the only person in this group of 100 people who doesn't understand this and has to ask a question, right? Like, it's best not to ask and just figure it out later or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you could pretty easily create a bunch of empathy here with the disciples who don't understand but are also afraid to ask.
Yeah. 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 Gosh. I mean, and it's interesting. Like, they're afraid to ask him. And then the very next line, he asks them a question, which I don't know if that's like calling on the kid in the class. That, like, is he, I don't know, he's going to pull something out of them. He asked them, what were you arguing about in the way? I assume he knows what they were arguing about, since the next line tells us. But either way, he's like, he's calling on them,
right?
But they still don't answer. They're silent. Hmm. They remain silent. And then, like, an interesting, like, Jesus is the only one that, is this right? Yeah, Jesus is the only one that speaks. Like, they're like, maybe they're murmuring to each other, but they never get quoted. It's just Jesus, right? And they're, like, silent because they're afraid, or they're silent because they're embarrassed. Like, there's all kinds of reasons, and mm-hmm. different reasons, like, why they're silenced. It's It's interesting. There's Tim. Stuff going on, Zach. There's stuff going on.
I mean, just to expand upon the children not being a precious moment sort of thing, children were a suck on resources because they weren't old enough to provide any economic value to the family yet, right? They could not work, but they took up resources. And with infant mortality and childhood mortality at much higher rates than we can even fathom, and in a society where starving to death was like a real problem, having to commit resources to someone who may not even live anyway to become a contributing member of the family is a heavy burden. And so you've got this in their minds, right? And again, right, limited goods economy. It's feeding this kid's taking food out of somebody else's mouth. You're taking away to give to this person who doesn't contribute anything. That's how they understood it. And Jesus is saying, this person who cannot do anything for you, who is the lowest person on the social totem pole, who may mm-hmm. cause you to die because you're going to give up your food for them, they will be the greatest in this thing that's coming.
Yeah. 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 I mean that description, like they contribute nothing of value. It makes me think of, like, you know, when I do baptismal classes and we work our way through Erlander's book that references Luther on baptism, who talks about how, you know, I mean, in my community, like, there are folks that will talk about, like, no, like, how could you baptize an infant? This is like a decision that you've got to make. Like, there are traditions like that that flow through our community. And so one of the ways that I talk about it is, like, you know, here's a little child, like Luther says, that has done nothing. This is nothing to deserve this. You've done nothing yet. And what better picture of the gift that God offers us in baptism, that we do nothing. We can't do anything. We're helpless. We're a resource suck.
Yeah.
and yet God blesses us and says,
I think that then the move, Matt, right, is to take that same grace and put it back on the disciples who continue in the way, not understanding and not even being able to ask questions about the things they don't understand. Yeah. And give them that same grace as well.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and it's like, if you're in a position where you're afraid to ask the question, does knowing your own belovedness before you ask that question at all, before you do anything, it's like you gotta speak up to ask the question, to be beloved, to earn, like, your worth. But to know that you're already worthy before you ask that question, does that then make it easier to take that step in faith? Maybe.
That's what we say campus ministry does.
Preach. Mm-hmm.
That when you're a part of a community in which you belong, that you know is going to be there for you regardless of the mistakes you make, you're much more likely to take risk, right? And because dumb questions exist. And you might ask a dumb question, and you might get embarrassed, and the professor might say something mean, right? Like, accepting the folks who live in your house, Matt, professors are human, and some of them are great and nice, and some of them are not nice, right?
Man. And the stuff I overhear, the professor in my house just dishing it out to the students, man.
Yeah.
Just they ask a dumb question, she just rips them in the chest, man. No, that does not happen.
Yeah.
But perhaps another classroom.
Perhaps
yes.
Another classroom,
yes.
Sure.
And then despite that happening. Yeah.
And when you...
There you go. See, Zach, you found that in this text.
Boom.
All killer, no filler. That's Mark. Mark's gospel, all killer, no filler.
There you have it, man. You got filler or killer for your songs this week?
Oh, I got, you know, as much as I don't want this to be about kids, I got all songs about kids. Yes, here we go. MGMT. I love MGMT. I've seen them at Coachella one time. They got a couple great little songs with synthesizers. It's just good stuff. MGMT, kids. Classic. One of their hits.
I have to check it out.
You know, it's one of their hits. One Republic.
Colorado band.
So, Are they really? So, yeah. Talking about the bands? Oh, man. I believe the lead singer has worked with U2 in their production, and they should stop working with them because they're better when they work with Eno and Lenoir. But One Republic also, a song called Kids. Back when we were kids. Oh, this is great power pop. And then finally, unavoidable 80s classic, Kids in America.
I don't think I know any of these songs.
So good. We're the kids in America.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I do know that one.
Good stuff. It was a fun playlist. I'm happy with
that's,
it.
What that's do you fun. I, going with the whole badass bitch reading of Proverbs, I looked at a number of songs that are really flourishing these days. You know, there are a lot of options out there for songs about how badass women can be and are. And I'm going to go with the TikTok hit of the pandemic, Savage, by Megan Thee Stallion featuring Beyonce, because the vinyl spouse sang it to me the other day and hadn't heard it in a while and reminded me of the Proverbs vision of women. And then, Matt, I'm fingers crossed. You've got a big Sunday. I've got a big Sunday. You've got Bishop Eaton, Eazy-E, coming to St. Mark's in Los Angeles. I'm heading to a cathedral on Sunday evening at Red Rocks to see the presiding bishop of folk music these days, folk country Americana, Brandi Carlile with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. I got my vaccine card ready to go. It's cards good. Only. I got a babysitter. I was told that we could not call them a babysitter, but that we must call them a big kid sitter because my daughter is five now.
Makes sense.
I've heard that multiple times now. And so I've been listening, getting ready for the show. You know, Matt, you got to prep yourself before you go to the show. And we've been listening to the High Women in particular. And there's a lovely little song on there called Only Child that I think, you know, it's a good song about being beloved.
Fantastic. Sounds good.
Oh, so excited, man.
Well, I'm jealous. Enjoy the show. That's what we got,
well,
I think.
Give Eazy-E my regards and remind her that she needs to keep it vinyl.
I gotta figure out how to slip in Eazy-E to the service.
Get her on the pod.
Oh, yeah, I may drop
you that. You should drop the pod,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe I should. Well, it's been real.
Real vinyl.